Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and this is Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognize, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to impressionist Connor Moore.
I had a brain tumor when I was in America in 2013.
Whoa, did not know that.
Yeah, and
have you spoken about that before?
Not really, no.
Okay.
I don't really speak about it because I try to.
It's kind of a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's. I kind of find like, and I know people say, well, that's not right or whatever, but I kind of find when you just don't give something or dwell on something, like it just doesn't, you don't really think about it too much.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
But it certainly had a profound effect on me, I think, because like I was about 23 or 4 and I was like, this happens to you, you're lying in a hospital bed and you're like, oh, I could die. And then you're like, you're thinking, all right, what have I done? Like, or what did I want to do? And all these questions, and you're like, I don't need to do that. And I've been floating around the last couple of years, like, you know, and I just haven't been doing anything. And, you know, just again, yeah, the only word I can describe it is floating.
Yeah.
Not really going anywhere. Wherever the wind takes you, you're just going there. But, like, in terms of, and I would have been, like, pretty ambitious even growing up. And when I get stuck into stuff, I really get stuck into it. And it was a couple of years there, I just wasn't getting stuck into anything. And that happened to me. And I remember there was a couple of months there where it was like, oh, well, we don't know what way this is kind of going to go. I got it taken out anyway, and it turned out like I kind of got it just in time. It wasn't like benign, but it wasn't like aggressively cancerous or whatever like that. But
had it gone unnoticed, it might have.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, like, whoa. Definitely.
Connor lives in Dublin with his wife Fiona, and they're currently in the process of building their forever home in Mullingar. And along with his career in entertainment, he also invested in a bar in New York a few years ago called the Westbury. In this conversation, he talks impressions and working with Tiger Woods. He talks golf and Formula One, his wife Fiona, his take on manifesting, and how having a brain tumour in his 20s changed him. And I started off by congratulating him on the success over the past 6.5 years.
I know, yeah, and it really does fly. Because when you hear 6.5, you think it's a long time.
Yeah.
And then you go, geez, everything happened like just so quick. Like, I still remember like working in 3. You know, like, so vividly, like, it's not like it was a lifetime ago or anything, but yeah, you think 6 years, and it's I just, every year I kind of set different kind of goals out for myself, and I get involved in different games. I kind of try and freshen it up all the time.
Yeah,
so there's always something going on, because otherwise, like, I couldn't stay in the one like game or category for a couple of years without just getting bored then. I was the same when I used to have jobs. Like people used to be like, oh, you're doing another interview, oh, you left that job as well, and I'm like, yeah, I would just go, 6 months gone, 6 months gone. I've gone something else then. I just have that. I don't know what it is.
Do you still have that?
At the minute, like, I'm obviously doing a lot of F1 stuff. And some of that like is based off like fear of like going stale or anything in any one game. Because like I kind of find with impressions, like they're funny the first two or three times. After that, then you have to have content. And see, that's the hard part.
Yeah.
Like when you hear, when I do a voice or whatever, it's sometimes weird. In Ireland, I find if I do, like when I used to do Joe Brawley years ago.
Yeah.
Hilarious. You'd be absolutely new and it's so wonderful. You can totally forget about you as far as your man. But people have heard me do it so many times. Then they're kind of listening, right? Where's the joke here? So I don't get the laugh for the voice.
Oh, right. I get you. Yeah.
And then I've been doing Tommy the last like year or two and yeah. Everyone just, you know, like that. And then, you know, you do the eyebrows like, you know, wonderful, isn't it? Thanks for having me now, Sheila. It's great.
And he has actually been on the pod.
And it was one of the greatest moments of my life. It really was. I mean, it made me really, you know, fantastic. It was beautiful. Yeah. Ajez, you know. Do you know what, actually, just to go off topic, I was only thinking of this morning. See your man, Austin Butler, won the Golden Globe.
Yeah.
And he did Elvis.
Yeah, he still has the accent.
And I'm trying to put myself in his shoes going, because I often, if I can't get somebody, like Tommy, when I was in America, like I was doing Tommy every day, listening to him. And I'd walk around the house and be like, I just kind of, when I'm on my own, I'd be like, right, now grab the cornflakes and where's the milk? And I just try to talk like them, like as much as I can, like sort of like method acting.
Method, yeah.
And obviously he was doing that for Elvis, like, but like his voice before it was like, yeah, you know, I was really excited to get out there and, you know, blah, blah. And obviously it's now, hey, how you doing? So great to get the Golden Globe, man. You know, playing Elvis was a real incredible experience. And you're like,
yeah,
man. And he's so
asked,
cool.
Yeah, he was asked about it, I think, afterwards in a press conference. And it was really sweet, actually, because he was saying, like, I actually am not even aware that I'm still doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because somebody asked, you're still basically doing the Elvis voice. What's going on? And he said, this is my voice now.
Yeah, and I kind of thought this morning I might just start going around like a Michael D. Yes, indeed. Well, it's wonderful, isn't it? Thanks for having me. Oh, just it's in my DNA now. I can't stop.
He's a great one to do as well, isn't he, Michael D?
He's got a great voice, yeah. Some people have different,
such a great
like,
voice.
Some people have great voices. Some people have great, like, mannerisms. Some people are just kind of stone mad and it's funny, like, you know. It all, like, depends, like, you know. Like, the Healy Rays, for example.
Yeah.
And you've two completely different accents, like.
Yeah.
Well, they're out there and you've Michael there. And geez, I tell you now, there's one thing here I will say straight out. That in terms of siblings, the greatest siblings in Ireland are me and Denny. You and Granny, you can take that back. And then you go over to Danny, he's like, well, out there today and it's kind of like that and the whole lot in the climate change. It's mad. Like, in fairness, in Ireland, like I find over in America, like you drive for 5 hours and like the accents won't change at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You could drive for like a half an hour down Mullingar, you could go like the Beliver there in Meath to have an and where who's going to, you know, it's like completely different.
So one of the people that I think you became so loved for and still to this day, of course, has to be him.
Absolutely. Joe Lachlan, yeah.
Oh, he was, to be honest with you, like I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for Joe. Like,
yeah, he was. Yeah, really.
Yeah. Well, you see, because when I started out in Joe, when I started doing the impersonations or whatever, the boys kind of hired me for football stuff in the UK. And when I went in there, again, it's funny the first couple of times and then like the content has to be good or else you're just going to get chopped up online. You know what it's like. And I found Jer was just like the kind of default safety character that like I could have Jer just going to the shop.
Yeah.
Like I had him buying a burrito one day from the shop. Like people loved it. Like then when I'd go on holidays, I'd go to Thailand and I'd just do a video of him in Thailand just going mad, just drinking and being in all the bars. And I'd do it on my phone over the course of a couple of days, put it together 2.5 minutes, bang, it would get like 200,000 views on Facebook and stuff like that. So it was like, I suppose it was such a confidence builder then because you knew you kind of had like a bit of a weapon in your pocket that like if you needed to pull it out or there was a week there where just there's not much going on or, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's like, I'll just do Jer doing anything. Mm. And people just loved it. Like people just love that kind of raw Irish. You see, because someone like him, people go, like he's of a certain age, so he'd be out of touch with modern Ireland. And I was kind of like bringing him into modern Ireland and his old school ways into modern Ireland. As someone said to me one day, it was like, that character Jer Lachlan was like it was. It's nothing really like the real Jer Lachlan in terms of the hardiness and the voice, obviously, and the shoulders and the neck and all that. But the wildness to it. Like, Ger doesn't even drink. Like, and try have him as this like party animal. It's like him mixed with Hugh Hefner or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, which isn't entirely true, obviously. But as one of the lads said to me, it's like, you created like the Gerlach Nan that we all in our heads want to think he's like.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's not really. But we'd love if like the camera went off and you're like, just he's a bit of a wild man, actually. You know what I mean? He looks going out. And that's yeah, it was huge. Like I remember doing it for Grani actually the first time on Up for the Match.
That's right.
And I don't know if she'd really heard it before then, and she was like, oh my god, that is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
I was like, Jez, you wouldn't have run the tone of sweet in your mouth. Yeah. And she was like, make sure you say that really slow on the TV so it lands.
She absolutely loved it. But I remember watching that night as well, and you know, you had already been doing a lot of stuff online, but I think it was your first time on TV, wasn't it? National TV.
First time on TV. And I was a bagging nurse.
Were you, yeah?
Oh my God, I was a bagging nurse. When I think back, it's amazing. I did Up for the Match last year. I've done it three times. Did it last year, and I was kind of laughing last year. I was sitting on the couch and I was looking at my watch. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be late. And I had to jump into the car and I was like, geez, like 3 years ago, I spent 3 days before that walking around my house, learning off my lines. Mm. Like, this was the biggest thing ever. And it's amazing how obviously, like, when you get, like, you do these things after a while,
experience.
You get a bit more confidence and experience, yeah, that they're not as daunting to you.
Now, I'm going to be asking you probably questions you've been asked a load of times before and the obvious ones, but, you know, you're brilliant at it. You've obviously got a huge amount of talent and it's a huge amount of work to do what you do. And as you said, write up all the material and all the rest. But as a kid, was it a constant thing where you were always, you know, impersonating people around you?
Yeah. Usually I get asked to do it as a kid and I'm always like, well, no. Like I remember when my dad got the Après Match DVD and I started like impersonating them. But like before that, even like my mum, every Christmas she'd be like, Connor, do the Pat Shore thing,
okay.
You know, do this, do that. But it'd be always doing people or whatever we'd see on like the TV or Christmas special or something. Like I remember even watching Titanic and going around pretending to talk like your man Cal. Like, I put the diamond in the coat.
Okay.
I put the coat on her, you know, or I'd be when I was younger trying to talk like Elvis.
Yeah.
Or trying to sing like Elvis. I was always like, I don't know, a lot of people probably do that as well in terms of singing, but
And yeah. Do you have a voice? Like, are you musical?
No, not at all. Would you believe I met Jerry Halliwell three weeks ago. I was doing a gig for Red Bull. And she was like, I bet you're an amazing singer. And I was like, I'm actually not. I've actually a really bad voice.
Right.
Like, obviously people think I have this excellent voice that I can just put them down with it and stuff. But I've no power in it. And I've like acid reflux. So like I can't, like even coming on here to speak, like I wouldn't have had a breakfast this morning because if I eat... my voice kind of goes soft and stuff. I remember doing the Late Show the first two times and drinking coffee and having food in the dressing room before it and going out. And then anytime I do a gig, I'm like, it must be a nervous thing that my voice just isn't as good. And then when I was in America, COVID hit, I was practicing so much. I realized at certain parts of the day, I wasn't as good at other parts of the day and went to a throat specialist. He's like, oh yeah, you have like silent acid reflux. Every time you eat whatever, my voice, like some sort of like, whatever, a phlegm or mucus, whatever is on your, not to get gross. So like I can't sing. And if I try to sing, like my voice goes hoarse really quick. So I can't. So if someone said to me, go in there to that room with no microphone and make everyone laugh doing impressions, I'd be like, I can't. I was like, I need a microphone. I need something to amplify my voice so that I don't have to stretch it.
Yes.
Or else I lose it all. But Jerry Heller was like, you're definitely musical. It was so funny actually. I was up on stage and I was doing these impersonations. I started doing Lewis Hamilton.
Okay.
Whole place starts booing or whatever.
Okay, yeah.
And just for the crack, like, you know.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, or the guy beside me was like, oh, come on guys, he's only pretending. And he's having a laugh, everyone's kind of laughing at it, whatever.
Yeah.
And then after I came down and she was like, why did that guy say you were pretending? I was like, what? They got to believe in the magic. And she was giving me all these tips. She was brilliant. Like, she'd really watched it, like, and came down and was like, and then she was like, you've got to be musical. You've got to be. And I was like, I'm not. I'm actually terrible. She's like, no, you got to be. I was like, trust me. Give me the microphone. I'll start singing. I'm terrible.
But even like I asked if you wanted a tea or coffee or whatever. No. As you said, you hadn't eaten, but you also haven't had any. So you have had nothing other than some water.
Yeah, like dairy. I cut dairy out of my diet and stuff
completely.
Like that. Yeah.
I mean, I suppose that's just you being very in tune and I suppose you got to mind your instrument.
Yeah, I look at Liam Gallagher and I'm like the most amazing voice ever, like in the 90s and stuff. And he obviously smoked a lot of cigarettes and drank a lot of beer and stuff like that. But you can see his voice changed so much as he got older.
Mm.
Still obviously like a great singer, but he's had to kind of adapt because his voice isn't like the young voice that he had. So I kind of, that's in my head as well. I'm like, you know, it doesn't stop me drinking, like, but I don't smoke anyway. Yeah, I'd be conscious of it now because I find like if I practice certain people, Like when I do Donald Trump, you know what you got to do, and it's very much like that. You know, and it's wonderful. A lot of people are telling me. But if I do that for like 5 minutes, my voice is red raw.
I can actually hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Put a load of pressure on your voice.
You know, it's like, it's wonderful. I love Galway. I got to come and visit. You got to take out the red carpet for Trump.
So when you're off, and you're not gigging, whatever, do you allow yourself to eat cheese or have milk? No. Just cut it out.
I think I'm the only person in the world that doesn't like cheese.
All right, okay.
I don't like cheese, but
there you go.
Or sorry, but to answer your question, actually, which I completely like deviated from, not purposefully, I was doing it a bit when I was younger, yeah, but not massively. Like, I wasn't always doing it. Like, my friends kind of wouldn't have known that I was, one or two of them would have known that I was good at it, like, because they were the only, like, my friend Alan Cashman, like, who still to this day, like, helps me write stuff and stuff.
Oh, brilliant.
He's a great sounding board. He kind of knows what's funny or something. And I was doing them for him. I was doing Dave O'Leary. Doing, you know, Mick McCarthy. I was doing all these lads when I was younger, like, and then you would have looked at Mario and he was doing Mourinho, and you would have been kind of like I would have been doing the Mourinho based off his Mourinho and stuff like that. But I wasn't like overly doing it. And when I got into it, then it was very random. Like, it was like quintessential Irish GA story. A row when a match breaks out. My cousin's involved, my uncle's involved, and I'm kind of standing to the side. I'm like, all right, if I don't like at least pretend to get involved here, I'm in trouble. Like, as in, I'll be looked upon like a coward, so I better jump in and throw my shoulder at someone or something. Anyway, the paper comes out. Anyway, it looks like I am like properly stuck in the middle, like going at it. Like, you know, it was a total misrepresentation, because it was like all pushing and shoving, like, and it looked like it was this vicious, you know. Okay. Riot, you know, that was going on, and all the lads were sending to me, and I was like, oh my god, I'm going to get suspended, like, and stuff. And I didn't get suspended because the video, there was nothing in it, and so I just did a video then on my Snapchat, had done the face swap thing, so I sent it to the lads, and the lads were like, just, that's brilliant, like. And if you watched it now compared to my stuff, you'd be like, just, that's terrible.
Okay.
But I was like, oh my god. And the boys were like, gotta put it on the internet. And I was like, no. And I kind of at the time had the sense to think, like, it's only a little row in Mullingar, who cares about it, like, bro.
Right.
So that night I didn't sleep, and I was up all night, and I was like, I'm just gonna do the same video tomorrow, but like about the championship. So I did like Colin Parkinson, who's like from the GA, Smaller Fish GA podcast. I was doing him talking to, like, you know, Davy Fitz and all these boys. And at the time, Jerlachan didn't even, like, I didn't even have him. Did a bit of Brolly. And I didn't actually have the confidence to put it on my own page, because I didn't want to look like I was trying to get attention for it. So one of my mates, Dennis Croon, he keeps ringing me, and I'm like, oh, I'll tell you what, you throw it up there and see what happens. He's like, perfect, give it to me. Boom. He threw it up and it went viral off his page.
Yeah.
So, and Paddy McKenna calls me up and he's like, we come to Joe, we might have a job for you. And I'm working in Three at the time selling phones. And you know the people that ring you up and they're like, hey, want to get your phone bill? Blah, blah, blah. You know, I can save you money. So I was doing that job. And Paddy rings me up and he's like, do you want to, you know, you're a good impressionist, blah, blah, blah. Come and have a meeting with him and Niall McGarry over at Joe. So I sat in the meeting and the lads are like, so show me your stuff. And I'm like, see that video there? That's my stuff. I was like, that's all I have. And they're like, all right. Oh, we thought you'd be able to do whatever. Can you do the UK lads, Premier League? And I'm like, oh, yeah. And they're like, all right. And I was like, well, just give me a week or so and I'll come back to you. Sent a video over of doing like certain people from the UK. Sent it to them. But I was like, sent it over to England. Lads in England were like, he's okay. So I didn't get the job and I left. Oh, I was dejected leaving Joe. And I'd already pretty much had let the lads at Tree know, like, I was on the way out the door.
Right, so you went in there thinking, okay, this is a done deal.
Sort of. I was fully confident I was going to get it, didn't get it then, and went back down to Tree then, and I kind of told them that I did get it.
Okay.
Because I was giving my notice in, because I decided that day, what I learned in the 10 days they gave me to do the video was, the impressions got better over the course of a few days. So I was like, this isn't actually like just this natural gift or anything. Like, this is like, if you put the hours in here, you can kind of sound like, I obviously have some sort of like vocal ability to do it, but it's all about putting in a lot of time. And I was like, the hell with it, I'm just going to put in loads of time to this. So I was like, I just quit the job. I was like 27 at the time. I was recently single, and I was just like, I kind of didn't have, what's Leonardo DiCaprio saying, the Titanic says, when you got nothing to lose.
So I
just gave up work.
Threw yourself
parents
into
didn't
it.
Really care, like, they were just like, go on. And I just was,
so you were on the dole, basically.
I was on the rock and roll. I was on the 188.
Yeah. Does it get easier now that you're years down the line, you're doing it?
Yeah, like certain characters, like, you'll always put them in similar situations, or they'll always say kind of similar things, or twist them in different ways and stuff like that. But Yeah, the writing of it is the big thing, and that's what kind of people don't realize. Even when they ask you to do something small, you're like, that could take me 2 or 3 days. Like yeah. It mightn't come to me. Like, now, I did a sketch last week about Prince Harry, Sky Sports.
That's brilliant. It's the most recent on your Instagram page. So funny.
Like, I wrote that in like half an hour.
Did you?
But then I might try to write something that could, and I'm like, I can't write it. And then there's weeks like over Christmas, I felt I had a writer's block. I couldn't write anything.
Yeah.
And some things just come to you like, but yeah, like, so I'd spend a couple of hours in the morning like doing some impersonations, and then I'd spend some time just writing some stuff or ideas or even jokes for somebody or something. Like, next month Netflix have a golf series coming out, and they also have Drive to Survive Formula One coming out. Like, I've already, they're written up, so good, I just idea. Have to record them then, you know, like next month. And then it's just about hopping on stuff. A lot of what I do is reactive, like, so I'd wait for something to happen. When it happens, then it's like, okay, do something off it, because my stuff is online. Like, if you did something on television, it would have to be more evergreen, which I find harder to write evergreen stuff. Just creating stuff out of nothing. I've even like tried to improve that. Like, I've even just started reading like just books, like classic, like the classic top 50 books of all time kind of thing.
Okay.
Because a lot of books, like when you go back through like the history of literature and stuff, all stories today are kind of based off stories that were written years ago, and they've twisted them in different ways, and it's just trying to get different ideas in. But like, I kind of struggle with that, but I'm really good, like, if Ronaldo does something and it's like, you know, when he the week he left Man United, I had two ideas in my head, but I got sick.
All right, okay.
And I was like, and my nose is all bunged up, and I couldn't then do the videos. Like, I wasn't like floored with it or anything. I could have recorded it, but it would have been like Ronaldo with a flu.
Yeah, okay. So at the beginning, right, so you go into Joe and you do your thing, and they say, look, it's not right now. You go off, you're working away, you're on the dole. That's, for how long are you doing that before something else happens?
4 months.
Right.
4 months. And I did a gig. I was over in New York, and McGregor was fighting Eddie Alvarez, and I was in New York or whatever, and these lads said to me, here, like, it wasn't a paid gig, and they were like, you want to get up there and do a few impressions, you know, whatever. And it was the Mean Fiddler.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Fiddler.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, yeah, the hell with it, sure, I'll just do it, like, you know what I mean? I'm here for the weekend, and I get up, and so I get up and I start talking. Now, imagine walking into Coppers and telling everyone like to shut up at 12 o'clock. Shut up, this fella's going to do some voices. And everyone's kind of looking at you going, who's this lad? So the guy, the DJ, is like, everybody stop. And there's sailors in there. There's even a place that's like jammed.
Yeah.
I start talking. First off, no one can really hear you. Second off, no one wants to hear you. Everyone's still doing their thing around you. And I'm standing there. And one of my mates from Mullingar that was there actually sent me a video of this. Like, it was 6 months ago. And it's so cringy and painful looking at myself. So like, and this fella just hits me with an ice cube, hits me right in the face with the ice cube. Oh. And then in my thinking, in that split second, I was like, I'm going to pretend to go at this lad.
Okay, okay.
Not because, right, I want to go at him. I wanted to nearly tank him, but I was going to rugby tackle him before I tanked him.
Yeah.
But just to get off the stage. So I kind of took a run at this fellow, whatever. Nothing really happened. Bit of a skirmish. Everyone's like, what the hell is this? Like, the mic is like, boom, off the floor. And then I was off and I was like, oh, grand or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think I met the fella later on that night. You know, I was like, oh, sorry about that. I was like, oh, man, fair play to you. Got me off the stage. But that happened to me. That was my first ever live event. And I was like, oh my God, like, that was horrific.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, is this for me? You know, I was like, this is rough, like, you know what I mean? This comedy stuff, you know, it can be so bad. And it took me a while. My cousin got married then at Christmas, and he had already penciled me in to do a thing at his wedding at Christmas. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll do it. And I swear to God, I thought of even like making myself hoarse the day before.
Okay.
I thought of it going outside and scream. I live out in the country. I was going to like just go out and scream in the field for about half an hour. So I didn't have to do it, because I was like, nah, like, I don't want to ruin his wedding and all. Because I didn't feel I had a set. I don't know, whatever happened to me that night. I was like, oh, you can't do that. That is like, that's quitting, like, you know. And I sat down in the box room in the house, and I just wrote stuff, and I was writing stuff, and I was writing stuff. And then I also had the added advantage that his father is probably my best impersonation,
uncle.
And when I was in the GAA club. I'd be doing him the whole time, and it kind of has one of these voices like this. It's, you know, it's funny, it's, his nose has been broke a couple of times. Okay. So I get up and I'm like breaking it, having a whiskey before I go up and everything, and get up there anyway, and it goes amazingly. The whole place. Now, it was a home gig, do you know what I mean? And they were all mad to see me do it live anyway, because they'd watch the videos.
Yeah.
And that gave me massive confidence then. In fact, it gave me too much confidence because I did a couple of gigs after that then that went really well as well. And then I thought I had it sewn up. And I was doing kind of small GA, same kind of wedding GA vibe kind of gigs, which are kind of intimate and everyone loves a bit of slagging and take the piss out of him and whatever. Just even mentioning names nearly gets a laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I go do a corporate gig one evening with the same gig. Completely right. Flat. Dead. Broly was at it, would you believe?
Okay.
And Broly was telling Evan, you want to sit, wait until he goes up there, wait until it's going to be absolutely wonderful. He's so brilliant, this fella, you know. And I get up there anyway, stink the place out. And then when I'm coming down, like literally shame, me head down and Broly's just like, he's standing up there and he's like,
yeah,
you
yeah,
are wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it was a great gig to do because I realised then I was like, well, I don't have that set. Like, yeah, I have the set for a wedding. I have the set for a GA gig. I have the set for a golf club. I have those sets and it's kind of like knowing what you have and what you don't have. I was like, I can't go into at the minute like, you know, like the Bank of Ireland Christmas party or whatever like that, like with Gerlach Nan and like all these sports people, Tiger Woods, you know what I mean? It's just going to fall flat on so many people because they are not going to be interested in sports, for instance, like, you know, who's, you know, or they're not going to know the things about those that I know kind of thing.
Yeah.
So then I did Vicar Street last September and then I, you know, wrote a whole show that was just catered towards Irish people. And then I used like a good bit of that and I had brilliant corporate gigs over Christmas. All of them went like so well. But it's right. All like a learning thing. Like,
Yeah.
Like you get up there and like, and every comedian tells you the same thing. Like the best gigs are the gigs that like where you do tank like and you learn. But it's about learning. Like some people come off the gig and they'll be like blaming the audience. And like, that's just not the right. It's like with the corporate gigs now, like I just kind of find it. The owl, you know, slagging off humor doesn't work. Like they're expecting more. It's harder to get the laughs, but yeah. You just have to think about the jokes better. You have to be trying and be smarter in what you're doing, like, and have them kind of going, oh, that was good. That was, oh yeah, I didn't see that coming. I find it like that. So it's kind of, so I remember meeting Barry Murphy from Upper Match and he said like the biggest thing for it is just know the room, like always know the room you're going into. Even like the Red Bull gig I did a couple of weeks ago, actually, like when I got over there, it was in London. It was in the O2 Arena or whatever. Now, not the main arena, like some room off. And I was like, oh, where's the gig? And the lady was like, oh, you're in it. This is it. And it was like 2,000 people with glow sticks. It was a nightclub. So I was doing there. I just didn't get brief or whatever. I didn't look at it. It was in the brief, to be fair. I didn't read it. Like, and it was like, I just thought it was like a sit down dinner sort of thing. And I was on stage then with Max Verstappen and Christian Horner and these boys from Red Bull and Sergio. And there's all these glow sticks and people just, and I'm just there going, yeah, of course, it's wonderful. Doing all these voices. It was still grand, but it was like, if I had actually read the thing and known what I was going into, I probably would have had maybe a song or something. You'd bring the energy up like on that one or something, you know?
Yeah.
But, it still went really well, but it was, yeah.
Do you love live gigs?
I love after them.
All right.
Yeah, or even after 2 minutes. It's the half an hour beforehand and it's just the 2 minutes at the start or the minute at the start. It's like, it's a bit like hell. You're like, oh my God. Because like, even though it doesn't happen to you, but you're always like, is this the day my mind's going to go blank?
Yeah.
Is this the day, like, oh no, panic is going to set in. I'm going to have my first panic attack or something. You're like, all this stuff is in your head, like before you do a live thing. But, yeah, as soon as I'm in it, I'm kind of like, I always tell myself, I was like, after like 45 seconds after a minute, like I'm going to be really comfortable. I know I am. And then at the end of it, like I always love the end of the gig, like, and just kind of meeting people and stuff like that and just coming down off it. Like, I've never got that kind of come down thing. In fairness, doing the Vicar Street stuff, for 6 years, I was doing after dinner gigs, like really, like everything was after dinner. Like it was golf gigs and stuff. So I was always mindful when I was walking on stage that like people aren't actually there to listen to me. They're there for a different reason. I'm just part of the entertainment. So you kind of had to, like in golf when I started out, you kind of had to win people over. But like now with golf, when I walk out to a room, nearly everyone knows you now at this stage, kind of like for doing the voices. So they're all kind of like smiling, waiting for you to start. And people are like, oh, when you're doing Vicar Street, like just last September and doing that live show around Ireland, it must have been so tough, like, you know, going from that to that. And I was like, no, it was actually way easier, like, because I don't know what this, I was never so calm doing gigs like doing the live tour around Ireland, because for the first time in my life, I was doing gigs where people actually paid to see me. So yeah. I felt like I was walking out in front of friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd never so calm doing gigs in all my life. I thoroughly enjoyed them.
Brilliant.
Like the best comment I was getting, I was love a lot of, I was thinking that my gig would be like 80% men, 20% women. I was fully sure it'd be like that. And when I was looking at it, I was like, no, this is 50-50.
Great.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
But after the gig, so many women were coming up. I'll be honest with you, I didn't know what I was coming into tonight. Okay. I was like, I only came because he dragged me. But Jesus, that was great. And that was the best comment I was getting.
Yeah.
And because the show I was doing, like, it's not sports. Like, it's not, like, as in there's Sunday game stuff in it, but everyone in Ireland knows, well, mostly the Sunday game. But like, doing David Attenborough, you're doing Michael D, doing Tommy Tiernan, you know, so, and then there's a bit of sports as well. Like, so I kind of was trying to get everybody in the room.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like it's just a sports thing or whatever. Like, it was like kind of half mainstream Ireland, even more, and then bits of sports and stuff like that. Yeah.
But in terms of voices, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it just Katie Taylor that you do that's female? Or do you do other female voices?
You know what I mean? I love doing a bit of Katie, yeah. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, it always gets a good out crack, you know what I mean? And everyone loves Katie, so it's great. Who else? I was looking at Joanne and that. My wife's always...
Joanne McNally.
Yeah, always playing the podcast Vogue and Joanne.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Vogue, what's going on? Like, what's going on? I don't know. And I'm like, just that would be a dynamite one, like, to break out on TV on The Late Late or something, like, because she's just so huge now.
She is,
like,
so huge.
Everyone seems to love her. Like,
yeah,
I'm,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm looking at that one, I'm like, geez, if you could really nail that, like, that'd be a great one, like to be doing around Ireland. But Katie, yeah. And then...
See, I would have imagined that Katie's accent is so hard because of, it's not just the accent, but it's the, whatever, the inflection in her voice or whatever you call it.
But that's all you play off. Like, at the end of the day, if you sat me and her down together and was like, you know, talk like Katie, like, you'd notice a massive difference. It's just,
sure.
It's like some people, you just pick that kind of inflection and it's like, you just run with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what I mean? And that's it, you know, kind of like that. Like, but, if you sat here, it's kind of like the same when I do in the golf with Ian Poulter. My Ian Poulter's like, oh, well, you know, that's it. It's amazing. But Poulter's more like, yes, I played really well out there today. And you know what I mean? You just kind of
ramp
run
it
with
up.
These things. Because it has to be kind of funny too. Like, do you know, it's like some voices, like, people are just really impressed that it's really accurate. It's like when I do Tiger at gigs, I'm like, they're like, so Tiger, how do you think things went? And I'm like, well, the conditions are really tough out there. They're really tough. And you see people in the audience like, and they're just, that's all they want. They just want to hear it perfect. But while other voices, then they want, like, they don't do that for that, even if it's accurate. Like, so it's got to be funny.
Yeah.
So you kind of find out and characters develop as you go on.
Obviously, the Tiger Woods stuff, it was genius and is genius. And it seemed to, I mean, you've had so many moments where this has been a pivotal moment in your career and a jump up and a jump up. But the Tiger stuff and doing an ad with him and meeting him in person was massive.
Oh, yeah. And he was, like, so sound. He was like, the sound was... The funny thing, like, people were like, oh, and people that were like, there was this book that came out, like, not too long before I did the ad, and people were like, did you read the book before you were going over? I was like, no, I didn't. I made sure I had not to read it, because, like, it's people kind of from the outside talking about Tiger or whatever, and he might have been rude to someone sometime or something like that, which, listen, you know what? He was one of the nicest people I've ever met.
Yeah, okay.
I was like, and not only that, like, he had gone to the trouble to go onto my YouTube page and watch, like, stuff on GA videos, and was asking me about, like, who's that guy you do with the condom on your head? I was like, with Jerlach Nanny. He's like, yeah, you're on stage with that guy, man. That was funny. That was really good. And I just thought that was class. I was like, he took the time to go, and, like, he could have just
really
rocked
sound
up and, like, hey, how are you going? Like, he didn't, like, and then at that day,
what was,
like,
he at for again?
Bridgestone Golf. So it was for golf balls. It was like, they wrote to me on Twitter and they're like, hey, you know, blah, 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 we might have a potential opportunity here. And I was like, oh, and I was sitting with my brother and I was like, I'd probably get a load of golf balls out of these boots. And it was an ad with Tiger Woods. Like,
yeah.
And
you got more than golf balls.
Yeah, I got them as well, though.
Yeah, good.
I made sure to get them in the ad.
Nice.
But no, he was brilliant. He was, like, very, I found, like, he made a real effort with me in, like, we were together for, like, 6 or 7 hours, like, you know, between, you know, like, when you're shooting an ad, like, you're sitting down a lot, like, in between takes, and they're moving cameras and moving lights and stuff. And I told him about everything. He asked about my father, my mother, my brothers, what did. Like, he just did. He was never an awkward silence with him or anything. It was dead on. My cousin then was telling him about, like, GA and how things, I was getting changed for one of the things, and I could hear him outside. He was like, so how did Connor start this? And my cousin, like, oh, let's start with a fight in a GA match. GA is, like, you know, whatever. The boys are showing him videos of GA matches. He's like, oh, good, cool.
Ah, that's deadly.
Yeah. No, yeah. He was so nice. And actually, I was saying it to someone after. I was like, geez, he was so nice. And they're like, yeah, he's really easy to work with. Like, it's like some of the guys, when the camera's on, they're brilliant. And when the camera, like, is off, you know, they're just... they're doing their thing.
Sure.
They're really putting effort in. And then it was like, he's nearly the opposite. When the camera's on him and people are like, put cameras in his face, he's very quiet and he's very like, just go away. And then when the camera goes off,
That's great to
best
hear.
Fun in the world.
So that's even nicer, isn't it? Because then you're getting the real deal.
And you don't see that with him. And obviously people, like, he doesn't publicise anything. So like, he doesn't try to put that like even out there.
Yeah.
I think people are probably seeing it a lot more now because you're seeing a lot less of him on the course now and a lot more of him like off because of his injuries and stuff. So people are actually kind of seeing him.
How did you break into the whole golf scene? How did that happen?
My dad became the captain of Mullingar Golf Club. And he was like, I want you to do a couple of gigs. And again, like, and bless him. And many people, they're like, oh, get up there and do a bit. Get up there and do a bit. And I'm kind of like, and even to this day, I'm trying to tell people, like, you know, the more I do in front of the same people, like, the less funnier this is going to be. And when you want to do something big or good, like, it's going to be, oh, Connor's doing the thing again. You know, it's like, we've seen Connor a bunch of times. So my dad was like, I might need you about 3 or 4 gigs. And I was like, I'll do one and that's it. I was like, I don't have the content to go and do it again in the same characters. But then I kind of thought, like, I was like, he's me father. I was like, I might have to do more than one for him. And I was like, well, maybe I could do golfers.
Yeah.
And then I was like, maybe I could do a golf video. And then I was like, oh, maybe I could do like, you know, like gigs around Ireland or something doing this. And then it just opened my head up to about like, you know, I was like, oh, I could make a few quid doing this. I suppose no one's doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
And did the first
Bob
video.
Golf.
Yeah. Did the first video and all of a sudden then 2 or 3 weeks later, I was on a flight to America. And
class.
That was it, yeah. The
wow.
rest is history.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So I suppose the big hitters would be the golf and now, as you mentioned, the Formula One stuff that you're doing.
It was over COVID and all my wife's friends were talking about the Grand Prix one day. I was like, who talks about the Grand Prix? I haven't heard people talking about Grand Prix in about 20 years. And I was like, do you watch the Formula One? They're like, not really. We watched Netflix Drive to Survive. And I was like, oh, it's this show about Formula One. It's brilliant. And I was like, all right. Went home, watched 3 episodes and we're like, all right, I'm doing that. I knew after 3 episodes, I was like, this is amazing. This is actually like doing my job for me, this show, because it's shown me the characters, what they're like, because you've no idea what they're like
outside
doing an interview after a race. But these people are following them. They're seeing them like interact with other people. They're seeing fights happen. And then I'm just exaggerating all these things. And I was like, I kind of knew. It was weird. When I did the video, I had it ready to go and I was getting married on the 13th of November. And then I was like, I don't know how I got, not that I got it mixed up. I obviously knew I was getting married on the 13th, but the video was going to go out like on the 11th or the 12th. And you see, for me, I had put like months of work into this. So it was a big deal. And I was like, we had to like host people on the Friday night. And I was going to put this out possibly Friday. And then I'm like, I can't do this. I was like, if this doesn't go well, yeah. my head will be wrecked. I'll be up, they'll be like, do you take Fiona to be your wife? I'd be like, oh, that was a bad video.
Like,
it would just be stuck in my head. And so I didn't put it out. And then I put it, then I was like, I'll put it out the following Friday. And I was even afraid of doing that. We're on our honeymoon. We're in Rome and we were going out to the Roman Forum. And then my wife's looking at me and she's just like, just put it out there. Will you put yourself out of your misery? Put it out then. And I just seen it like fly. And I was like, oh, yes. And then about a week or two later, I was offered to go to Abu Dhabi for the final of the Grand Prix. So the CEO was straight on, like, Stefano. He was amazing. But I couldn't go because I had a gig and I couldn't get out of the gig and I was kind of raging. I was like, and Abu Dhabi ended up being probably the most famous race of all time.
Right.
Where Hamilton Verstappen had the last lap or something for the title. And then we were trying to get it going this year and then we ended up going in October and it was just amazing. It's like, again, it's like golf. Obviously, there's plenty of money in that kind of game. And
sure.
you get to see how just the whole operation is just incredible. And I was coming back telling everybody, you got to go. You got to go to the Grand Prix. They're amazing.
Yeah.
My wife's kind of looking at me going, you got to stop saying that, Connor, because what you went to, you were there with the CEO and like all these, you know, it's not the same as being sitting down in the stand looking at you. I was like, yeah, really, I should stop.
Yeah. And let's talk about Fiona because you have a lovely backstory.
We met in New York and we started going out and then we were in New York about a year and a half. I was there maybe 2 years, whatever. And then we went home and I was jumping around between jobs. I had a job in finance. Again, like I was saying earlier on, a job in finance and that was boring me. And I, in my head, finance was like the Wolf of Wall Street. It was going to be like chaotic and just this mad. Okay. And then I was like, you know, it's just not like that really, unless you want to go to New York and be in the stock exchange. But I was kind of bored. And then I ended up working, selling phones door to door for a while. And then I went to Tree. I actually really enjoyed that. And I don't know, whatever was going on with me at the time, anyway, we broke up. And
well, like, look, no breakup is easy. All breakups are crap. Oh, yeah. There's a degrees of crapness. Was it an okay breakup?
Nah, not really. Like, okay. It wasn't.
You were wounded, both of you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, definitely. And I was surprised how wounded, like, I was from it. You know what I mean? And, like, and then I can only imagine what she was like. And I think I was going through, like obviously, I'm being facetious here, kind of saying this, but like a midlife crisis at 26 or whatever
right,
age
okay,
I was.
Yeah.
I was kind of going, what am I doing? What am I? And then it was like the pressures and it was like looking at like, oh, you know, do I get a mortgage now? And I have to go and do this. And you'll like, I don't know. Yeah. I was just like, no, I wanted to do all these different things and blah, blah, blah. And so I went off for a walk in the desert. I was just kind of, I suppose in a sense, free. And then I was like, right, I've no job. I'm going to do these impersonations. I'm going to try to do this and blah, blah, blah. In my head, when we first broke up, I was like, I'm going to go traveling again. I think I need to go traveling again. I need to go and get that out of me. And I need to go do this and all this type of stuff. And then I ended up just falling into the impersonations because of that GA match. And then I was doing them for a couple of years. And like, I would always text each other and stuff on like birthdays and stuff like
all
that.
All right, okay.
There was always that kind of, you're nearly gone, but then it'd be a text.
Yeah,
I was like,
interesting.
I nearly forget about him. And then I text or something like that.
Yeah.
Or a drunk text like, happy birthday. She was like, oh, that was 6 months. Or no, you're 6 months early or something.
God, okay. What did you learn about yourself during that time?
I would say I would have grown a lot. Like stuff that just happened before her. Like I actually, I had a brain tumor when I was in America in 2013.
Whoa, did not know that.
Yeah, and...
Have you spoken about that before?
Not really, no. I don't really speak about it like... Because I try to...
It's kind of a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's... I kind of find like... And I know people say, well, that's not right or whatever, but I kind of find when you just don't give something or dwell on something, like it just doesn't... You don't really think about it too much.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
But it certainly had a profound effect on me, I think, because like I was about 23 or 4 and I was like, this happens to you and you're lying in a hospital bed and you're like, oh, I could die. And then you're like, you're thinking, all right, what have I done? Like, or what did I want to do? And all these questions. And you're like, I don't need to do that. And I've been floating around the last couple of years, like, you know, and I just haven't been doing anything. And, you know, just again, the only word I can describe it is floating.
Yeah.
Not really going anywhere. Wherever the wind takes you, you're just going there. But like in terms of, and I would have been like pretty ambitious even growing up and, when I get stuck into stuff, I really get stuck into it. And it was a couple of years there, I just wasn't getting stuck into anything. And that happened to me. And I remember there was a couple of months there where it was like, oh, well, we don't know what way this is kind of going to go. I got it taken out anyway, and it turned out like, I kind of got it just in time. It wasn't like benign, but it wasn't like aggressively cancerous or whatever like that. But
had it gone unnoticed, it might have
been. 100%, yeah, like whoa. Definitely.
Right.
And it took me a while to get even those answers. So for a while, I didn't know what way that was going to go. But
so did you have to have checkups and stuff like that after?
Oh yeah, to this day, like, do you know, okay. I would have been like a total hypochondriac for a few years, like where stuff would have been happening to me and I was worried about everything. I thought I had MS. And even to this day, I still get the tingles and I get all this stuff in my body. But I just know it's not it because for a couple of years after it, anything happened to me at all, I was like, I had to go get a scan. I was like, oh, it's back. And then it's like, it's not back. And then even I was dealing with like a brilliant neurologist and he was like, a lot of stuff that like is going on with you is actually like stems from health anxiety. It's not stemmed from that. Where it was in my brain, I think it's like short-term memory. He was saying, if anything, it would have affected a bit of that, which I actually have a terrible short-term memory. Well, I think I always have, but...
Okay.
So to this day, yeah, like even last year, I remember like I would be getting muscle twitches and stuff like firing off like some mornings and stuff like that. But I just like, it doesn't affect me mentally really at all. I'm just like, no. And then if I need to go get a scanner and you get a scan and it's all clear. But it certainly had a profound effect on my life at that time. Like I remember even like asking her to go out with me and stuff. Like I wouldn't really have, I kind of went a bit over and beyond, kind of like I was pretty out there with it. Oh, I like you, you know, and usually you'd be kind of more trying to play it cool. And
so you asked her out after?
Oh yeah, after the tumour happened, then I was kind of much like, you know, I was working around and then I was like, I'm living life to the fullest. And I was, I was in America. I remember the day when the doctor was like, oh, you're grand, you're going to live for a long time or something like that. Like, now and again, no one can be certain. I was like, I still have to get checkups and stuff like that. But like, I remember like running around Central Park, it was a really hot day in July or whatever. And I was like jumping along. And even like, I find I think I have to do scans them every 2 or 3 years or whatever. But like every year when you get the scan, it's like, you're on the beer and whatever, you're eating crap food. Then you get the scan and you're kind of going, oh, and you're a bit anxious for 2 or 3 days. You come back, it's like, oh, it's all clear. And you're like, that's it. I'm on the healthy food, the water, give it to me. And I'm like healthy like for about 6 weeks. I kind of look at it and I go like, it was, if I could go back and change it, like if someone told me like I was gone next year or something, I go, oh, you could go back and change it. Like I wouldn't change anything. Like it had such a good effect on me that like.
Yeah. You're not afraid to take risks, I suppose.
Yeah. And then everything I did, like I know I suppose like in a bad way, sometimes you can be an impulsive, but like it can like work to your advantage and stuff. And just things like that, you kind of look back at that. And even when like, you know, the odd bad thing might happen to you, like you don't take knocks as bad. Like, you know, you kind of, it does give you just a better sense of being grateful, not to get too like poignant or emotional or anything like that. But like, I'm like Lewis Hamilton, # grateful. But you do. It has a really amazing effect on you, I think. And it's had a great effect on me in that regard. And just with work and everything. And like a lot of people are like, you must have a lot of pinch me moments. And I'm like, you know, a lot of pinch me moments for me happen on a Monday afternoon when I'm like, it's Monday. And like, I don't feel like I have Mondays. Like, you know, I work for myself. I do my own thing and I'm working in sport. Like, and I kind of feel like at the minute, like I'm in, I don't know, I'm really into journalism and journalists and I'm like finding people I like reading and stuff like that. And I just love storytelling.
Yeah.
And some people are just brilliant at it. It's like, even when you listen to like Tommy on the podcast and everyone finds him hilarious, but I am always like, that was just how he like tells that there, how he went there with that story or how he describes stuff for me is just like it's poetry really.
It is,
he's a poet like in a funny way.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So would you have a typical day then? Do you have structure to your weeks?
Oh yeah, big time, yeah.
Right. You need it?
Oh yeah. Well, I think you need it. I remember doing it at the start and I was a bit like, you know, a lot of people that like get these like kind of handy gigs on the internet, then it's kind of like, oh, I don't have to work. And I was kind of going, well, actually, if I work the same hours as everybody else, like, I could really, really get good at this. I could get way better. Like, because I guarantee you, there's probably not too many people putting in 9 or 10 hours a day. Like, maybe there's a few, but I was like, you know, when you're doing that kind of internet thing. So like, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd go out. I used to like not cuddle the dog, but we got a dog there. And it's like, Jesus. I wasn't expecting the love.
Oh, what kind of dog do you have?
A cockapoo. Like a cocker poodle.
Yeah.
And he's gorgeous. Like,
yeah.
And you see, I'm on my own in the house all the time because Fiona works. And the company he gives me is unbelievable. So he's a big part of my day now, like walking him in Phoenix Park every day around 1 o'clock, bring the ball over. But like, I get up maybe 7 o'clock. I get up around 6:30, try to, if I don't hit the snooze button. But, try to start around 7, do impressions till 9 or something, then get up, have breakfast, and then I'll go back up. There's always something, like, you know, at the minute you'd be working on stuff that might be happening next month or whatever. And then sometimes, like, I could work all day because at the minute, like, I'm trying to like learn more about Formula One, because the more you're in it, the more you need to know. And I didn't watch it for maybe 20 years. So like at the minute, like, you know, I spent one of the days last week learning about engines, like, and crankshafts and all this kind of stuff. And
right.
The inners workings of an engine. And then in the evening, I might turn on like an F1 documentary or something, because like, it's just good to know these things so you can hold a conversation with anybody if you're doing an F1 podcast.
So you hogging the telly all the time?
Oh, pretty much, yeah. And it's all in the name of work.
Oh, right, okay.
And we're building a house. I'm like, you want this house built or not?
Yeah, so let's, because people listening might be going, wait a second now. He was talking about going out with Fiona and then they broke up and then, you know, she lost something else and
they
went off in another. It's not your fault, it's mine. So a few things. Number one, you're living in Ireland because, you know, you have lived in America, but you are living in Ireland and you have been for the past...
Since the end of 2020,
yeah.
COVID,
I came home.
Yeah, and I couldn't get back over then.
And you and Fiona are married and you're building your forever home.
Yeah.
In Mullingar. Okay, so how do you go from we're wounded, we're broken up, I'm now just throwing myself into the impressions and, you know, how do you reconnect? How does that happen?
As Dunfield says, the GA, baby. I was doing a gig... I was doing a gig in Liberty Hall for at the time Colin Parkinson was doing the GA hour at Joe, and I had to go up and do 10 minute slot at the start or whatever, and
right.
Drove up, parked down by the Boar's Head. Hugh gave me an old parking space, and I walked up to Liberty Hall, and I was like, I was very conscious that day that like Fiona works in Pennies, and I was like, I haven't seen her in 4 years, like, it'd be weird if I walked into her, like, and I was kind of walking along the Lewis line, I was kind of looking into the people at the Lewis, like, after work, and I was like, no, she's not there. Walking along.
But
anyway.
You were thinking of her concert.
I actually was that day. It was weird. Like,
yeah.
You know, so I went back, got into the car and after the gig. And then as I drove just out the road, coming onto the kind of main road there, it wasn't Cable Street, it was the other street kind of behind it. She was just walking across the road. And I was like, oh, Jesus. So I just kind of drove after, I was about to say something. And then...
No, but in all seriousness, how did it feel when you actually saw her?
Yeah, no, it was a bit weird. I was kind of sitting there, I was like...
Did you get the butterflies in the stomach?
Yeah, well, I was more like, I wonder what reaction she'll have now when she sees me, kind of thing.
So you'd been texting the odd time, the birthday or whatever, but you hadn't actually seen each other in how long at this stage?
4 years.
Right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't know, I drove down the road and then there was a sign that says, danger, wrong way, turn back. I was going down the wrong way down that street or whatever.
And, oh, were you?
Yeah, so I had to turn around or whatever. So I just texted her then. I was like, oh, do you want to go for a drink? She was like, nah, I'm all right. And...
ouch.
I was like, all right, Grant. And then, although she was telling me after, the only reason she said no, she was like, I only have to come in and work. I hadn't seen you in 4 years. And I was like, I wasn't going to meet you, kind of. So
it wasn't that she wasn't interested, just she didn't want to see you just then?
Yeah. bit of both, I presume. But anyway, okay. Text her again a couple of weeks later or whatever like that. And we met up and then that was it, really. I was after, it was just at 2019, the time I was living in New York and I was after coming home and I was kind of after having like, like, I had a great year in New York. I went and I was like, I was always infatuated with New York when I was a kid. And when I went to move, when I got the Golf Channel gig, I was like, I'm going to New York to live in New York. Because I've lived there for a few years in J1s and all this kind of stuff. And always struggled to make a few quid, like. And it was like, hopefully you have enough money to go out the weekend and stuff like that. And you blow it all in, you have no money. And I was like, wouldn't it be great to just live in New York and just not have to work all the time? So I literally went over. And as a kid, I was... infatuated with the Empire State Building, just loved it. So I got I got an apartment right beside it.
Class.
So it was literally right beside it, and then around the corner was the pub, the Long Hall, that like Johnny Kennedy and Colin Clark, two Irish lads, have. And I was just hanging out there the whole time with them, and I was in there. We were saying it before the podcast. It was like living in New York, you may as well be living in Ireland, like,
yeah,
because the community is so small, and
totally.
Everyone knows you and stuff. And it was, I used to hang out there the whole time. I was in the apartment very little. I was there. But it was like, when you're hanging out in a pub all the time, you're always kind of drinking and stuff. And
yeah,
when I go home then at the end of the year, the Open was on, Shane had won the Open, and I was back home for a couple of weeks, and then I was doing some GA stuff. I always like to get home around that time anyway, just to be around and go to the finals and stuff. And then that's when we just met again. But I was going back then to Florida in January. We'd go back together like near the end of the year or whatever, and I'd gone to Florida and...
So you had changed in the sense that, you know, you may not have changed as a person and what really matters, but in terms of your profile, there was a big change in those 2 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, massive. At the end, like,
yeah.
You know, I don't think she would have even seen me from the day I started Connor Sketches, like, and then was doing all that, like, so yeah, it was. It was, but it was still very much, we're still like the same. That was the thing. It was just still the same, you know.
So when you met up in person, was it... Was it just a feeling of comfort and slipping back into the old, or was it like fireworks, or was it a bit of both? Where, how did you feel in on that kind of reunion piece?
Yeah, it was definitely more comfort. It was just like,
This is meant to be.
Yeah, I remember we were in Blackbird and Rat Mines or whatever, and I was there rabbiting on. After about an hour, I was like, geez, I'm after rabbiting on about, like, I was giving out about something at the time, I think. So I was like, we're very comfortable.
Yeah.
Giving out about, I don't know what I was giving out about. But so yeah, that was it. And then I just kind of knew, and it was like, you know, you go off or whatever. And like everything in life, you're always looking at, you know, that saying about the faraway hills, and I went off and I was in America and it was different things like that. And then sometimes you just realise, you know, certain things, and they come to you then, and you're like, oh, geez, I had it really good there.
Yeah. Do you think you are somebody that has, it sounds like, you know, you're somebody who, I mean, the word, they bandy around the word manifesting a lot nowadays, you know, you can manifest what you want. But you're saying you always want to live, you always love New York, you always wanted to live beside the Empire State Building, and you did. You wanted to be in a relationship with Fiona, so you went out and you put yourself out there initially and said, will we do this? And now you're married, now you're building a home together.
Yeah, what's weird is I used to read a lot of those kind of books before I had the brain tumor. I used to read them all the time. And then I kind of realised, I was like, and this is the, like, I think the trap you can fall into in these books. You're always, sometimes you're in a, I don't know, like a place of hope all the time. You're like, oh, things are going to be better down there. And I found myself just reading too much of these things. But, and it'd make you feel good, but it's like unless you act on these things and you start acting. And then I remember after that happened to me, I was a bit like, all right, less reading and just more doing, like,
okay,
start doing stuff. And like, because like there has to be kind of action to it. Like, and
yeah,
like if you do want something, you have to go after it. Because at the same time, like you look at the Tiger Woods thing and you look, I wouldn't have like said, I want to do those things. People say to me, like, what kind of goals do you have? And I'm kind of getting better at that, but like a lot of time I'm like, I just kind of find, I just keep working, and then these opportunities just keep coming, like,
yeah,
do you know? And it's like, it's a different opportunity. Or, but yeah, some days I do go, I don't know, you know, some people believe in that type of stuff and some people don't. And I'm like, did I manifest that?
Yeah. Now, you mentioned bars there in New York, but you have your own bar, or you're part owner of a bar, aren't you?
Yeah, it was because I was a piece of furniture in the Long Haul after a while, and the boys were looking at another place a few blocks up, and it was the old Australian bar. And then we're like, well, we're going to go and take this bar. Like, do you want to get involved or whatever? And I was like, yeah, the two lads are great. Like, they're yin and yang. They like both do two like sort of different jobs in the place, and they just dovetail brilliantly together. And I do kind of, I'm a bit on the marketing side, so bring a bit of attention to the place. And so, like, you know, we did the Katie Taylor video there where the fight was on and had all the characters in it.
That's a brilliant video.
Yeah, a couple of those videos, and it just kind of brings attention to the place then. And obviously people then, like, you know, hopefully you get some people in and stuff like that. And the two boys then are excellent at keeping people, you know, in the place. Yeah. Like, we opened it up we tried to open it up in 2020 and COVID hit.
Yeah.
And so then I just thought, all right, well, that's dead. And very much like, I was just like, whatever. Do you know, even though obviously, you know, you stick a few quid into it and stuff. It's the first time I kind of did anything like business wise. And I was just very, people were ringing me like when this all happened, they're like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm grand, to be honest. I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked at it like it was dead and gone, and turned out it wasn't then. Like, the boys kept the place going, and the last year has been excellent in it. Like, you know,
class.
It's got a decent little name for itself in New York now, and it's, yeah, it's going really well. And I love getting over there and then visiting and stuff. I love it. It's weird. Some people like be texting, write to me on social media. You're like, well, are you in the pub tonight? And I'm like, no, I'm in Ireland, man. And then it's weird because some days I'd be in the pub and they're like, we came down tonight. And we're like, oh, we might see you. Just can't believe you're here, you know, and stuff like that. So it's very much like people are like, is it a golf crowd or whatever? It's very much an Irish crowd to go in.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, a lot of Irish people.
So how are you getting on with the house? Because we're building a house as well at the moment, and I'm learning a lot about stuff.
Oh.
Do
you need me to go down and build your house? Because I can build it. There's stuff there. Oh, it's like, people are like, oh, it's a great time. And it is great in a sense, like when things kind of come together, but there's so much like stress to it as well. And
what stage are you at?
We've got the roof on.
Okay, very good.
The windows
next.
Hopefully next month, it's looking like.
Great stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that's lovely. I love where it is. It's down in, I grew up there, so I'm like building the house pretty much on where I grew up. But like the lake is just there. Loch Ennell, Belvedere House. Like, I don't know if you've ever been in it, but like,
I haven't actually. No,
it's just the nicest walk in the world. You just go down there and just walk, or even like going out to the lake, and you know, I'd bring me stuff out, and people are like, "Do you fish?" I'm like, "No, I just go out there and write stuff." You know?
Yeah.
And then like the golf club is around the corner, and you're only like 5-6 minutes from Mullingar, just out, you know, but you're nicely just out in the country, kind of away. It's lovely. Like, I can't wait to get down there. Like, can't wait to get it up and running and stuff like that, and kind of I'll work out of it then. Have a kind of place to work, a proper place, like do a room or two up, like, so it's for recording stuff. At the minute, like, we're living out in Chapel Izzard. I have to say, it's lovely, like, but like I work out of a room now. It'll be a bathroom. People will be, I'll be doing Zooms, like, and all they see is this big green thing behind me.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And where do you do your, you know, what studio do you use? I was like, oh, you're looking at it. No, I can't wait to, you know, get the house built. There's something kind of like, it's one of those milestones in your life. You're like, oh, geez, I have a front door. Like, you know, I can't wait to have a front door and walk into my
house
and
stuff. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Fair play. Because, I mean, I know you always speak about that. You are really gifted. You're extremely talented. But you wouldn't be the name you are today if you didn't absolutely work your ass off doing the material.
Oh, yeah. Like, and just evidence of that is like, go back to the start of my Facebook page, for instance, and just look at the impressions, like, and how, like, they were getting adulation back then because no one else was doing a lot of these people, like.
Right, okay.
But if you look at them now compared to what I do now in terms of the voices, like, they're very poor. Do you know? It just goes to show you that, like, if you want to, I shouldn't be really giving away the secrets here. From me, 100 good impressionists in Ireland. But, yeah, I just find it's like that. Like, you just have to put the hours in. But, like, you know, like, people say to me, like, oh, you're such a hard worker. And I remember my cousin was doing an extension in his house and he handed me a shovel one morning. It was like, shovel a bit of concrete there with him, whatever. So I was getting dizzy after 10 minutes. And I was like, and then people would be like, you work so hard. And I'm looking over at the boys and I'm like, they're like, you're useless. But yeah, I put in the hours. But like, again, like, I'm blessed. Like, it's not, to me, it's not work. Like, I might get up in the morning and I might say, oh, from 11 till 12, I'm going to like listen to the second captain's podcast or whatever. And the boys talking about football.
Yeah.
And, but for me, like, I'm just, even if I wasn't working and I'd be listening to that podcast, like, it's a great podcast or whatever, just for
sure.
Football. But yeah, also I look at it
Everything's
like work,
research, yeah.
And I'm trying to, like, you know, and you know, and they're talking about stuff that they might know, and you're trying to look and you're like, oh, that fella's like that, is he? And you find out stuff about characters and or managers or stuff, yeah, or stuff that you didn't know happened in that week. So even that, like, I find, and I'm like, how cool is that? That's work.
Yeah, of course. You know? Do you find it hard to switch off though? If you're always kind of looking for inspiration.
Oh, I don't switch off.
Do you not?
Oh, like, I'm going to bed at night now and I'm just like...
wired.
Yeah, yeah. Some days I'm good. If I do an awful lot of work and I get an awful lot done, it's kind of like I go, oh, I can rest. Mm. I've done enough. But most of the time, like, no. And then even if I'm like listening to someone and someone says something funny, I'm like, that was good.
Okay. So do you have long-term goals? Because the work that you do, it requires a lot of minding yourself, minding your voice. And do you still see yourself on stages in 10, 20 years' time?
I don't know. Like, when I was growing up as well, like, it was always my kind of dream to be like a businessman, have a business or two and stuff like that. And I look at it now, I'm always looking at stuff. I'm like, maybe, okay, could I get involved in that? Could I get involved in that? And then also to have that as a backup if it ever happened. Like, I was doing an interview with The Independent a couple of weeks ago, and I was just saying, I did construction in 2006 in college and then dropped out and went back and did my leaving cert again to go back to get the points to go to Dublin to go to college.
Really? Fair play to you.
Yeah. And when I went, it was 2008, like, and all anybody, like, risk management, we had that about 5 days a week because the crash had happened. So the thing to be talking about was like protecting yourself. And the word I remember from college, like, and it's funny, when the Wolf of Wall Street, Leonardo DiCaprio, the guy says to him, so what's the secret to your success? And he goes, diversification. And I remember in college, like, it was just diversification, diversification, diversification. And so when I started doing this, I was a little bit like, geez, you know, I, you know, just from like a business point of view, like, protect myself a little bit, like, that it's not all GEA stuff. Cause like, and I don't mean like I ever see myself getting canceled, but like, you never know, you could say something or something stupid or whatever.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden then it's like, oh, we don't want him doing that anymore. But like, then if you're doing golf and you're doing Formula One and you're doing different games, you'd really have to say something really stupid to...
Yeah, swipe them all out, yeah.
Yeah, but and not even that, but also people just getting tired of you in a particular game, and also the fact that, like, you know, if I was just doing GEA now still for the last 6 years since I started doing it, and you had to, like, keep making content and stuff, I'd say people would be bored with it right now. But instead, like, I might do 3 or 4 videos a year, and then when it comes out, it's been, like, so long since the last one, it's like... you know, it's received well because it's, you're not oversaturating it. So like being involved in all the different sports for me is important. And I suppose then I look at it and I go, all right, well, maybe can I protect myself even more by like maybe getting involved in one or two things that are not related to comedy or not related to kind of entertainment in a sense.
Where do those smarts come from?
I wouldn't call it smarts. I call it paranoia. I don't know.
You have a good business head in you, because you clearly know, you know what you want to do, but you also know, I want to make a few bob of this.
Yeah. Like at the end of it, like that's like obviously what you're like. Well, I wouldn't say that's what I'm doing it for. I do like I love it. Like if I wasn't making like, you know, if I was just getting by on it, I'd still do it. Do you know what I mean? Like I do love doing it.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, yeah, if I was just getting by doing this, or I had a job and someone says, oh, you're on 100 grand a year in like, you know, a finance company, I would like prefer to do this. Do you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say like money's a motivation. Well, not since I started building the house. Now it's a little bit.
Yeah.
You're looking at it and you're going, okay, might not have the money for that. I don't know, like when I was younger, again, like when that happened to me in 2013 and stuff, I was kind of sitting there going, geez, I had all these kind of ambitions. I was going to do this and I was going to do that. And I was kind of like thinking about doing them all the time. And it will happen in the future, but like not really acting on any of it. And then, yeah, ever since that kind of happened to me, I kind of act a lot more on stuff and kind of just, it makes you, people go, I don't care what people think. Like everybody cares to a certain degree what people think. If you didn't, like you're a sociopath.
Yeah.
Like I would like to think that my family think I'm a decent individual. Like people around me think I'm, you know, a nice enough guy that like I wouldn't like, you know, do anything bad to anybody. But at the same time you go, you know, you can't be like making decisions based on like what you think other people are going to say or do and stuff like that. Like I knew, I remember one thing when I quit the job when I was 27, I was thinking about like relatives and friends and them going, geez, what's he doing? He's 27 and he's like going making videos. And I remember I thought of it for about 10 seconds and I was like effort, like,
yeah. You know? Great.
And I just kind of, so yeah, I was always kind of like that. That happened to me. And then I was like, I suppose with the, I remember reading a book one day and it was like people kind of, there's two things that motivate people. Like one of them is like attainment and getting something, and the other thing is fear. So like you're either going towards something or you're going away from something. And maybe it's kind of my fear of like that day where you are done or whatever, and it's like, well, what will I do? You know?
Yeah.
You know, I was just talking to someone the other day about it, and it's like, yeah. And I was like, I don't know if I'd be doing it in 10 years. He goes, yeah, you think that? And he goes, 10 years then, your kids are going to school. You have all these other expenses and you're like, oh no, you got to do this. You got to keep going. You got to do that. And it's like, so yeah, I'd kind of be always trying to think long term, long picture.
Yeah.
With short term impulses.
Yes. And in the short term, right now, you're right smack bang in the middle of a tour.
Yeah.
So Olympia last night.
Yeah.
And you're all over the place for the month of February. And you have another date in March for the Olympia.
Yeah, next month, start of March or whatever. So tickets are on. We're in Cork, Kerry, Wexford, Loud, loads of places. And tickets are at connorsketches.com for whatever is kind of left. I know like a few of them are sold out. Mullingar, like I might be, I'm trying to see, can I put on a few more dates, Mullingar, the homecoming. When I first done the gig last year, everyone was like, wait a minute, no Mullingar on it? And I was like, no, I want it to be last. When I finish it. So I wanted to do a couple of gigs just to kind of finesse it.
Because
I was like, I'm not going there my first week.
Okay.
In Mullingar. I was like, I want to end it at Mullingar. But I'm not actually. I end up doing a few nights in Mullingar and then I've got the Olympia at the end of the week after. And then I head to America for golf.
Class.
Mm. And then I'm starting an F1 podcast as well.
Okay.
Kind of just doing sketches and stuff like that. And
on your own or with others?
On my own, but I'll probably have to do a bit of chatting with someone like about like what's going on in Formula One, that kind of thing.
Come here. So Tommy has been on the podcast. Tommy Tiernan has already been on, and he had a guest on the show recently, Roy Keane. Would you have a word with him about coming on this pod?
It's so funny. I was looking at that. That piece, and I was like, this is the way I saw it in my head. I was like, I was kind of going, when I'd be doing a Tommy, I was like, Jez, I'd love to interview Roy Keane, you know. I'd say it'd be just a staring competition of about 15 minutes. Just, you know. And then in my head, I was like, the bit I had kind of written out, it's amazing how the sex therapist came on after Keane.
Yeah, Jenny Keane, who's also been on the pod, yeah.
Yeah, so my bit was, you know, I'd love to interview Roy, and I wouldn't ask him about Saipan or any of that crack. Now, I would just talk to him about sex, you know, and his opinion on modern day sex. And I could just imagine his response, like, you know, We don't homosexual. People are overcomplicating it. You know? You just get in there. You're 90 seconds to perform. Get in there, do your job. You know, people talking about positioning and, you know, formations. Foreplay. No foreplay back in my day. You just did your job. End of the day. Then I'd ask him to recite a poem and I'd say he just hit me after that.
That's brilliant. So had you that done?
I've that written down and that done, and I was watching the episode and I was like, oh my God, this is exactly how I have the bit like written out. Like, and the fact that Jenny came on after it,
yes,
I was like, it even makes now more sense when I tell it. It's like, yeah. So I was talking to Roy and Jez, he gave me nothing. And I'd say if I asked him the time, he would have kept it to himself. And then a sex therapist came on. And on the way home, I thought, oh, I should have asked Roy about sex.
That's brilliant. I love it. I love it. So you're always watching. You're always tuning into stuff. It's always look. It's you're again. It's back to the manifesting. You're predicting stuff that's going to happen.
I do. Yeah. Maybe I am.
Come here. It's been brilliant talking to you. It's, you know, I'm a huge fan. You're so talented. And look, you could have done a million impressions during the chat, but I suppose I really wanted to get a sense of you yourself, and I feel like I did, which is great. So. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
No, yeah, and it's always nice to have these conversations, and it's not all just like voice after voice. And I really enjoyed it. And thanks so much for having me on.
If you like this episode, you can support the pod in all the usual ways by clicking follow, giving a rating, or leaving a little comment. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.